Hello and welcome, fellow awesomeologists to Awesomeology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben, and in this episode, we're joined by Danya Dorman, founder and CEO of Omnia Exec LLC. Welcome back, Danya.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Sue. So nice to be back.
Always good to have you here. Thank you for being with us now as our first three-peat guest. That first is exciting.
There's a little plaque we've made for you. It's in the mail. It's on its way.
Okay, yeah. Very good.
I thought we were going to do smoking jacket.
Oh. Yeah, right.
A championship ring, a crown. I'll take it all.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Hey, speaking of championship ring, spoiler alert here, because this won't get released immediately, but this will date this episode. Last night was the men's NCAA basketball championship. Florida won.
Yes.
Danya, are you still in Tampa?
Yes, I live in Tampa. I am not a Gator, but Congratulations to the Gators. That was quite the game.
Yeah. So that was my question, was if you're, I know you're not a Gator, but are you a Gator fan, or who's your Florida team?
You know, I try to stay Florida agnostic. I went to the University of New Mexico, go Lobos.
Oh, so
we didn't get past the first round. That's okay. But you know, any Florida team that's succeeding is great for Florida. So I'm all in.
Awesome. Cool.
There you go.
So before we dive in, tell us a bit about Omnia Exec, what you're up to, what you're doing, and maybe an update since the last time we chatted.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, thank you for having me both. I love your podcast, and the community is fantastic. So these days, I am the founder and CEO, like you said, of Omnia Exec. And Omnia Exec is a boutique firm, and we help organizations streamline processes, strengthen cross-team collaboration, and help them stay aligned no matter what the market throws at you. We are passionate about building change-resilient teams, helping improve processes, and ultimately fortifying cross-functional collaboration so that we can drive better outcomes that are really aligned with business objectives.
Oh my gosh. I love all of that. And you are so good at articulating it, which I'm not surprised. I mean, as long as I've known you, Danya, you've been clearly really passionate about purpose and helping people and doing it and communicating it in a way that's really effective so that people understand like the value of what you provide and your organization provides. So, yeah.
Thanks, Ben. Yeah. I love, you know, bringing people together and doing the right work at the right time, you know, being on purpose, like you said, and really having impact.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you reached out to see if we could have you back on the podcast, which was an easy yes, by the way, maybe easiest yes ever, no offense to any of our other guests, but you proposed a topic that's been top of mind for credit union leaders, which you kind of teased a little bit there, boosting strategic agility in the face of nonstop disruption. You may not be surprised by this, but the world's been a little unpredictable lately.
Just a little bit.
We all know something about disruption and instability, right? But what are some of the top disruptors credit unions are facing today?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. We have had conversations with different credit union CEOs and other executives, and we're hearing somewhat of a revolving door of disruptors and disruption, you know, setting aside economic uncertainty that you just spoke about. You know, credit unions continue to face disruption with technology and fintechs, right? What does that relationship look like? How can we partner together and be friends, not foes? Similarly, there's digital-driven changes and disruptions that are coming from member expectations, right? Members want to have their financial experience be personalized like Netflix, but also convenient like Instacart. So what does that mean from a technology and data digital transformation perspective, and that as disruption? And then another disruption that credit unions continue to face is around talent. Believe it or not, returning to work and other impacts on culture, DEI, this climate, those can be disruptions. But really, no matter the flavor of the month disruption, what's becoming clearer is this need for cross-functional alignment and agility. Because unless your teams are really fully aligned and agile, solving and responding to those big issues that I just mentioned will just become increasingly more difficult and costly.
Yeah. Hold on, Sue.
Okay. Sorry, I blew up.
I have to digress just a little bit, because you mentioned digital transformation and, you know, the world that we're living in, which, you know, digital services, digital experiences were all amplified and made real faster than any of us maybe wanted them to happen during the pandemic and things like that. So, and it's been a while, right? I mean, right. As much as that feels like yesterday, it's been 5 years since it all started, I suppose. Of course, we're still feeling some of the effects of it and everything.
Right.
My question is, for credit unions and really, I mean, any organization, any business that is on that spectrum of digital transformation, like what's taking people so long, or what's the barrier that people maybe can't get past to say, all right, like first off, there probably is no end, right? We're continually transforming for sure. So maybe I'm answering my own question here, but what's the barrier for people to say, like, I'm at a healthy spot in mm-hmm. our digital transformation journey? Have you seen anything? Is there anything you're noticing?
Well, I think it all relates to feedback and getting that member feedback. So everything is that continuous improvement continuum that you just talked about, Ben, and credit unions that recognize they have their core capabilities in place to provide sort of the digital transformation expectations of their members. That's great, but that's just today, because tomorrow they're going to want more, because technology continues to evolve and all these other influences from their other digital experiences, whether it's, like I mentioned, Instacart or you name it, app on your phone, they want that similar experience at the credit union. So it's important that credit unions recognize what really are our core capabilities. Where are we willing to either build internally or buy, you know, partner with a fintech or partner with another organization that we can leverage their technology, and make sure that what we're delivering is what our members want.
Mm. Yeah. Maybe yeah. The last thing you said there is the most important. Like, are we actually giving something that our members want and need? And I think it's easy to forget about what you've done so far on your journey, right? Like, you know, maybe it's old news now that you offer a remote check deposit or something, but also, like, maybe that's something that your members want and absolutely need right now. And so you should still continue to talk about it, even though you implemented that 10 years ago or whenever, right? You know, so I think it's easy to forget about the progress we've made too.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would think of an example from Amazon. You know, when they first came out with Amazon Prime, it was important that people got just sort of next day delivery. Well, after a while, Amazon and their members recognize it's not so much that next day delivery is most convenient for me. It's being able to choose the day or choose the time for the delivery. So what started off as a nice value add with next day turned into now you can choose and maybe even delay your delivery, pair your other packages to be delivered at the same day. So I share that as a model for credit unions to identify what you just said. So remote check deposit was a thing, still is a thing. Maybe we need to revisit some of those nuances to refine it to meet, you know, again, changing member expectations as of today.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for entertaining me. Thanks for my digression. Sorry to interrupt you, Sue.
It's okay. It's okay. We're still friends. So you, Danya, you mentioned this concept of making sure that we're responding to disruption in a cross-functional way. And I think everyone has experienced organizations that are highly siloed, and maybe, you know, as long as we're invoking the specter of the pandemic, you know, that sort of offsite asynchronous work has contributed to those silos and made those silo walls a little stronger.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah. So what really is that worst case scenario if different departments are not able to align on these things? What's the end game there?
Yeah, I really appreciate this question. So when I think about worst case scenario, a term that comes to mind is actually collaboration drag. Have either of you heard of that term? Familiar?
Oh.
Okay, so collaboration drag is a term that Gartner has coined recently, and it's when productivity, execution, and efficiency decrease because team members are involved in too many meetings, there's too much feedback coming from all the stakeholders, there's unclear decision-making, and so you can just imagine just the overwhelm, right, of collaborating.
No, not at all, Danya.
Yeah. What is that? So I bring that up because you specifically called out marketing. So see, get this, senior marketing executives spend 17% more time collaborating than their peers. And marketing team members spend 47%. That's nearly half of their time collaborating either internally with their team or with other stakeholders. So anyone that's experiencing this collaboration drag, they're 15 times more likely to feel burned out and then 9 times more likely to leave your organization in the next 12 months. So I share that not only because I love marketing professionals, being a former one, and my love for executives and team members who are experiencing collaboration drag, they probably aren't as proficient at, or they may be failing to be able to pivot and respond to changing priorities. And that's why they're also feeling this overwhelm. And it's not, you know, a fault of their own. It may be systematic with the organization, how the organization is set up to really tackle these unexpected activities. You know, teams need to be able to respond and adjust appropriately. But if the organization doesn't have the right framework, then we can't respond to change so quickly. So when you ask Sue about worst case scenario, here's what that looks like. So let's play this out. Collaboration drag means burnout leads to walkouts, which leads to costly and time-consuming recruitment. We've all experienced that in trying to train up our new hire. Meanwhile, less staff and more work means decreased productivity, sometimes poorer quality outcomes and deliverables for our marketing teams, and sometimes late project launches for our frontline team members. So, you know, that credit card that we were talking about with our members, the deposit team's not able to meet their targets, lending isn't meeting their targets, members are having bad experiences, so our reputation takes a hit. We're no longer the credit union, the best credit union in town, or the best place to work. An absolute worst case is the credit union closes, communities suffer, and they have to then go to the next best or sometimes next worst alternative for their financial well-being. So while that is a doomsday worst case scenario and a fringe case, you know, I think most executives live somewhere between somewhere in the middle, right? Suffering in silence, where this has just become the norm and we're okay with it, or those that have reached a critical breaking point and it's no longer tolerable. So a major initiative that got delayed, we missed a market opportunity. CEOs, CFOs, and board chairs really don't favor that. And or maybe failure to prioritize, you know, that latest change effort really led calls to the call center to increase and team members calling out sick. So there's a lot of steps, fortunately, to get us not to worst case scenario, where we can put some interventions and best practices in place.
So speaking of best practices, let's flip the script a little bit. So Broadly speaking, what are those best practices? How do people stay nimble, stay responsive, get on the right track before that terrible worst case scenario, or even like just not so awesome scenario, right?
Right, exactly. It's somewhat iterative, right? We don't want to get to that end road credit union is closed. So there's some interventions along the way or best practices. So, you know, being nimble and responsive, it really requires being intentional. And one solution can be that teams look internally. They make commitments to themselves to modify the way that they're working to possibly minimize burnout. They may even identify, you know, a decision matrix for when they can say or should be saying no to a project request. But unless that decision matrix and sort of that project prioritization is shared and also supported across the organization, marketing teams don't really have a choice when it comes to work and then having to be responsive and nimble to, well, we were working on this one thing, but now we have this new request. So when we work with clients, we try to encourage sort of this 3P approach to staying nimble and responsive. So we focus on aligning people, processes, and priorities, because ultimately it requires, you know, an agile mindset and an agile way of working, where the most impactful initiatives are the ones that are constantly getting reprioritized, and you have workflows and tools that help you deliver work that's more visible across the organization and with your team. There's better collaboration. There's more knowledge sharing. We heard Sue mention this earlier about silos. So we want to dismantle silos and also promote operational efficiency that, you know, our financial teams really appreciate.
You're really speaking deeply to our hearts right now, Danya, because this is a question I think that we have wrestled with for years. Mm-hmm. And It really, it's that moment of when, how, where do we say no? When, you know, how do we do that without risking our reputation?
Right.
How, you know, and I think semi-importantly, how do we do that without contributing another meeting where we, you know, we are just, we have to now explain why we had to say no. And that is only creating, you know, less space to actually get the work done.
Yeah. And more tension.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I hate to pull back the curtain and air our dirty laundry, but I don't think it's something that we've nailed, that idea of being able to just say, oh no, well, you asked for, this is the thing that I say to the team and act like it's easy to say. You asked for this other thing. Now you're changing your mind. Now let's talk about you making a decision about which one we are going to do.
Right.
It sounds great here. I don't know if we've really successfully done that.
I understand. And I think a lot of people share that same experience. So let me share an example of something that's worked with one of our clients, and then sort of break down some internal questions that you can ask around people, process, and priorities. So we worked with a national nonprofit. They probably have upwards of 500 team members, and their marketing function has about 20 people, including some contractors. And so you can imagine over time, their project requests from the different departments continue to ratchet up. And so now they've taken about 1,500 project requests for deliverables in 1 year. And so what they found was, you know, that same collaboration drag and overwhelm. And their solution was zeroing in on their process. So their process of intaking work, being able to have a visual tool as a central source for requesting work, but also for the stakeholders to see work in progress. So they could actually see, all right, this request that I'm asking of you, let's now renegotiate and prioritize. Is it still as urgent as what we're currently working on? Or, you know, can it fall later in the stack of, you know, work in progress? And so that visibility allowed them to pull the curtain back and have more effective conversations, less workarounds, and really negotiate work. Go ahead, Ben.
I was just going to say, I think the word that's like coming to my mind as you're talking is just, it's transparency, and the most cliche way I can say it too, which is, you know, transparency on your team, you know, letting each other know what you're working on, what your priorities are, and then certainly sharing with the people that are requesting work of you too, because I do think at the end of the day, there are plenty of organizations that have a really healthy, collaborative, agile structure that there's a ton of built-in respect for everybody. And, you know, we appreciate what each other does and the specialties we bring and our talents and all of that. But sometimes we just don't know, like, what you all have going on. So, of course, our only option is to say, well, I need this thing and I need it by then with no other information, you know. And so I do think that, like, just that pulling back of the curtain that we've said a few times today is a vulnerable thing to do. It's super uncomfortable for sure, but showing people what you're working on and where things are at and stuff can also be an incredibly useful tool to open up negotiations, to even like build a culture of empathy. Like, oh my gosh, I understand, like, you know, what you have going on and the challenges that you're facing, because every time I request something, it feels like I'm stacking on top of the pile that you already have. So let's work on this together, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I agree with you, Ben. I think more often than not, people, especially in our credit union world, we want to deliver great work. We want to be great team members. And how many times have we heard we have to have the right team members and they have to be on the right bus and we have to be going in the right direction? Well, I would challenge us to consider, not only do we need the right team members, but we need the right team members with the right mindset. Because sometimes our team members, while they are well-intentioned, they may have a fixed mindset and are stuck with doing work the way that they've always done it, maybe because it's more comfortable or it's more safe for them. But if we train and develop an agile and a growth mindset, that enables team members to be able to change course or drop a project when something else is higher importance. And part of that, you know, agile mindset is really letting go of perfection and being good enough, or being good with good enough, right? As long as it meets the objective, right? And there's no catastrophic failure.
Yeah, absolutely. Done is better than perfect is a thing we've said more than once.
Yes,
That's
100%.
for
Yeah. So dropping the processes and the ways of doing things. How many times have we also recognized in credit unions that we have legacy systems, and we also have legacy systems and legacy thinking? So,
sure.
what are these processes that we continue to do? Are they adding value, and are they aligned with the priorities of the organization?
Yeah, I do think that there's a like a challenge that we've got with this mindset of like getting things done. Done is better than perfect, however you want to say it, because of course the main thing that we're concerned about with that mindset is a lack of excellence or a lack
Right.
of quality, and valid, 100% valid, that we always want to do our best work and put out something that feels perfect to us, or maybe even is darn near perfect, but the expense there is backlog and burnout and all these other things that we've been talking about.
Yeah, 100%. So to answer your question, Sue, to stay nimble, you have to not be bogged down with collaboration drag, right? Having that right mindset, these efficient workflows, collaboration, dismantling that whole perfection, and really embracing iteration and failure to a certain extent.
I think it's what is interesting, and this is what's going through my mind as we're talking about this. There is such a difference between certain verticals of the credit union space really deal in such a black and white world. Absolutely, objectively correct answers to things. And if you get the objectively correct answer, then you're done and you can move on. And then some of us also live in this liminal space of subjectivity. So there isn't an absolutely correct, the absolutely correct answer in marketing is the thing that gets the results. And we don't know that till we've done it. So that I imagine that is one of the differences that contributes to collaboration drag,
Go ahead.
because we know that you have to do the thing, you have to put out the thing, test it, and see what happens and iterate from there. And I think there are so many folks who are living in this objective world where they say, well, yes, but I have a spreadsheet that calculates this thing, and if I either get a right answer or a wrong answer. So if I look at the thing that you're trying to make, I should be able to objectively tell you if it's right or wrong.
And it doesn't always work that way. So it's our opportunity. I would challenge us marketing people to invite those that think in ones and zeros or spreadsheets and black and white to embrace or be first start with awareness of this experimental approach to getting things done, and how feedback plays a feedback is just as important to us as marketing members as, hitting enter on your formula in Excel. Like, they are both data points that inform that we're either on track or off track and need to make a change. So sometimes it starts with awareness. This is the way that we operate. This is why. This is the value of having this experimental, flexible way of working. And we invite you to participate so that together we can deliver the quality work that the organization requires, because that's what our members need.
Love it. Love that mindset. Love inviting that idea of inviting them into that mindset. So, what are some other things credit unions or really any other business could be doing now to make sure they're ready to respond to disruption and move forward quickly without burning people out?
That's key, right? No burnout, no burnout allowed. I would say the best thing for credit unions and organizations alike is really to prioritize creating change resilient teams and functioning cross-functional collaboration, and shoring up those workflows and technology and the legacy systems and legacy thinkings that we talked about, so that everything can be enabled. Often I think organizations fail to really recognize the true cost, whether that's time, resources, or budget, it takes to really equip your team to respond to disruption and be flexible. The last time we ran some numbers, I personally can get a little nerdy with research. And so, for an example, a 5-member marketing team, if we did our math right, they lost about $628,000 annually to lost efficiency and impact. So their inability to effectively respond to change and disruption led to more time in meetings, more time reworking work in progress, delayed approvals, and of course, opportunity costs. So that's really expensive. And again, no CFO or CEO wants to spend $628,000 lost on team members that aren't able to adjust and adapt mm-hmm. for the organization. So this whole concept of wait and see doesn't work. So we can't wait and see if our teams are resilient when change happens. We can't wait and see if they're going to get along, these departments, just because they operate at the same organization. We have to really be intentional about building resilience and teamwork into the organization's DNA. And what that looks like, what that could look like, is ongoing development. While we love a workshop, I'm not sure if you have heard of this term, the forgetting curve, but I may pronounce the researcher's name incorrectly, but according to Evan House, after you participate in a training or a learning, your retention of that information drops by 50% after day one, and then drops, learners forget about 90% of what they learned after a month. So when I talk about incorporating this into your DNA, it's not one and done. It's continuous improvement, continuous development of our team members, and continuously analyzing our framework and our processes to see are they optimal? Are they the best that they can be for our team and ultimately for our members?
Yeah, that is, I believe I have heard that about the learning curve, but that every time, that's one of those things that it just blows your mind. It hurts. Yeah.
It's wild, right? Yeah, because think about the investment, time, resources mm-hmm. into training. And you know, during a training, there's great information shared, there's great experiences. But until we get to having behavioral changes, right. we're not going to see the value and the impact of that training just by doing a one and done. And again, we offer workshops and we do programs, but what is best is when it can be a program and it can be opportunities for people to practice these new mm-hmm. behaviors and shed the old ways of doing things.
Yeah. I had the really awesome opportunity to do a little workshop at the America's Credit Union's Marketing PR and Development Conference last month.
Nice.
And I'm just so sad that we're approaching a month from that and they've forgotten so much of it already, according to the... forgetting
according to the research. Yeah, it's not you.
According to the research, right?
It's not you.
Yeah, it's not me. No, it's just what the research says.
Yeah, it's them.
Yeah. But you know who I bet would love to hear this is our friends in training when somebody, they onboard an employee and within 2 months they say, oh, I don't think they mentioned that in training. And immediately the supervisor is going back to training with a, you know, ready to fight.
Exactly.
It's inevitable. They're going to forget something until we create those habits,
Right.
You
know.
Yeah. The behavior that we need.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Danya, I want to rewind to one thing because you mentioned a decision matrix, and we've used the tool that was inspired by a book that we kind of book clubbed and read together that's helped us kind of assign decisions to our whole team. And, you know, really one of the end goals and the outcomes of that is to kind of push decisions down as far as they can go, right? Like Ben doesn't need to make this decision, so Sue has everything she needs to do it. Or if it's not Sue, it's somebody on her team, you know? So, and it's been helpful for us. And it's something that, you know, of course we could probably do better, sure. But, the one challenge that comes with that is continually revisiting it and making sure that mm-hmm. it's updated. And we're talking about what new decisions are being made or what shifts on the team have happened so that it's something that, is actually a helpful tool and not just a spreadsheet that lives somewhere. Yeah. Yours that you mentioned sounds as though it's one of the outcomes is whether or not the work even gets done or maybe how it gets prioritized. Because I think our decision matrix is really geared towards the work that we already have on our plate, who can mm-hmm. help make the decisions to move that work along as efficiently and productively as possible. So we've already committed to the work. I'm sure our team and many teams, particularly marketing teams, could benefit from that first decision of do we even do the work or not, or when do we do it? So can you just elaborate a little bit more on what that is, what that looks like, how you get to the to making the decisions of building that decision matrix?
Yeah, exactly. So I commend you, Ben, for pushing decisions down to those closest to doing the work, because they're the most informed. And, you know, we are a fan of executive team members describing and telling the what, like what is the outcome we're trying to achieve, letting the how be determined by the people closest to the work, but also having responsibility as an executive team member to give sort of boundary conditions mm-hmm. and considerations. So here are things that we know aren't going to work. You can try it, but this is what happened last time, or sure. this is where we certainly can't end up because it could be a catastrophic failure. So here are sort of your boundaries for moving forward. But when you've already committed to the work. So prior to, it's really about relative prioritization. So something unexpected pops up. You're already working on your list of initiatives that may have stemmed from the annual strategic plan that, in my opinion, should always be continuously refined, not set and forget it. But anyway, I digress. when something new comes in that the organization or the department should entertain working on, it's important to recognize what is the existing work in progress and the other things that are queued up in your backlog. And there are a couple of different matrices that you can use to identify, you know, the importance, the criticality of it, the effort involved, or maybe the cost. And by stack ranking those different categories for each of your initiatives, you actually, for our quantitative folks, can come up with a score, and that can help you stack rank, okay, based on these somewhat empirical data points, this should be the next thing that we work on, which may have been that new interruption or something that was already on the plate. But yeah, they're definitely, and as the simplest matrix would be sort of an effort versus reward or effort versus value, just a 2x2 matrix to identify what's high value and low effort. That would be ideal. Yeah, so lots of ways to approach it, but making sure that ultimately the team, whether that's the department or the entire organization, is really working on that most impactful work and not just working on something because it's on a checklist of projects to get done.
Yeah. I love that. And I love the idea of a tool like a four square or 2x2 chart, you know, that exactly as you described, it was what I was picturing in my head as you were talking. And, you know, that maybe removes a little bit of the emotion and subjectivity out of it too, right? Like, let's just really like rate this thing as to what it is. And it might not be the end all be all in making that decision as to whether mm-hmm. or not you do the work, but I can definitely mm-hmm. envision it being a really helpful tool.
Exactly. And, you know, we talk about people, processes, and priorities. We can't forget the people side. So sometimes we know that we come to project prioritization conversations with maybe a bias, and perhaps the loudest voice in the room is the one that gets the project at the top, or, you know, we've all had different experiences. So there needs to be a little bit of humility and humanity when you're mm-hmm. having those prioritization conversations, and really think about what is the ultimate objective for our members or for the organization, not just necessarily my department or my own personal goals when possible.
Yeah. Maybe easier said than done. But
I know.
For sure.
Yeah. We can aspire for it.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we get ready to wrap up, what's the one piece of advice you'd like our listeners to take from the conversation today?
I would say, don't wait to invest in your team. So ROI is important. It's something we always are trying to prove in marketing. And there is an ROI to having change resilient team members who can collaborate effectively and efficiently and align to the strategic business outcomes. You know, I referenced that number before, $628,000 in lost efficiency and productivity and impact. Research also shows that investing in marketing teams can actually reduce collaboration drag by 23%. So using that number before, that's nearly $150,000 improvement back to the organization. And so what CFO or CEO wouldn't want that? Right. So truly be intentional. Don't wait to invest in your team.
Love it. Yeah. Love all of it.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we need to transition to our closing segment where we share something awesome. This has already been awesome enough, but here we go. So I'm going to have a really quick share today. Smartless is one of my most favoritist ever podcasts to listen to. And actually, it's kind of funny, like yesterday, the latest episode, I just had enough like driving around town that I was able to get the whole episode in one day, which usually it takes me like a few like 10 minute sections throughout the week to get to it. But anyway, a couple of weeks ago, their guests were Brandi Carlile and Elton John, which like both incredible musicians and like still like making albums and touring and stuff, which for Elton John, it kind of blows my mind just how old he is, but also just a cool collaboration between those two. But the reason I'm mentioning their episode on podcast and not just their tour and new album and all that stuff is because something I learned in listening to that episode was that they've been like friends since Brandi Carlile was like super young, like a teenager or something. And like summering with them in London or, you know, over in the UK and stuff. And it's just, you wouldn't know by like the difference in the styles of their music and, you know, obviously just where they're from geographically and all those things. Just one of those cool relationships that like two celebrities have that like, without something like a podcast like that to get into the heart of their relationship and stuff and learn all these cool things about them. None of us would know about, which, you know, I suppose is our gift and maybe their curse that we get to find out about this long, you know, relationship that they've had or whatever. But I've listened to a little bit of their stuff. They were on SNL this last weekend and everything. And it's just, I think anytime that you mash up two creative people like that, especially two that maybe come from different worlds and have totally different styles, like good things can happen, and they're definitely a good thing. And you can tell that like their friendship and love for each other is at like the core of their music and stuff. So it's just a cool story, cool episode. And I mean, who doesn't like Elton John, right? I mean,
right. Yeah, that is cool. The unexpected it's a good from list. That relationship.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Did you bring something, Danya? Do you have something awesome to share with us today?
I do. So my something awesome was witnessing the two astronauts that were stuck in space for nine months, people. I watched it. I watched the broadcast, the streaming on either NASA or SpaceX. First of all, I love all things space. And so the nerd in me really loved that it was a logistical masterpiece. Because at every milestone during this 17 hour trek, you heard different call outs and updates. First, it was in like this technical speak, but then the two communication coordinators, they would actually repeat it back into regular speak for the rest of us. And so I really loved, you know, you would see the team members in Houston and probably Florida and all their other command centrals. But every team member just masterfully owned their responsibility and their part of this process, including, you know, when the capsule did a splashdown in the Gulf, one of the team members literally jumped in the water and climbed on top of the capsule and wrapped this rope, probably has a different name, but essentially a rope around the capsule so that it could be tugged and docked onto this ship. And so, you know, thinking about that in collaboration and teamwork, but also the ultimate pivot, right? These astronauts, Butch Wilmore is one of the astronauts, and he said the plan went way off for what we had planned, but because we're in human spaceflight, we prepare for any number of contingencies. And so the fact that they prepared for long, even though they planned for short, I thought was so transferable for cross-functional teams and projects. We're not all astronauts. But at the same time, we can work together and we can pivot and we can plan and prepare for disruption as if we were astronauts and just have a beautiful return to Earth.
Yeah. Love that. And good example, nice callback to what we were talking about, like done is better than perfect.
Yeah.
That whole mission did not go perfectly, but wound up getting done in a really amazing way that created a cool story. And I mean, I'm sure they'd rather had been home earlier or whatever, but you know, still those contingencies and those plans made it all possible. So that's awesome. And from a fellow space geek and nerd, Danya, how do I not know this about you? We need to like catch up and talk about all the space.
Yes. All the apps, like my Constellation app, all of them on my phone.
Yeah.
Watching rocket launches. Yeah. Let's talk then.
Cool. Yeah.
And the good news for you two is space is big.
Yeah.
Really big. So you have a lot to talk about.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, you know, I mean, yes. And like how mind-boggling it all is, that, you know, how big space is and how long they were up in orbit and all those things, and still it's somebody's job to tie the rope around the thing. Like, it's so funny. Yeah. Like, the different complexities of the technology that makes it all possible, you know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, it was still, they come home in this thing that we got to tie a rope around and winch into the ship, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And I really loved that you tied that back to that idea of collaboration. I think when you think about something like a space program, everyone there understands how it's mission critical to collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
And why we don't apply that to our everyday jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
But I think we should continue to work on it. And
exactly. Yeah. Our purpose in our credit unions and our respective areas is just as equally important, because mm-hmm. it has an impact on someone's life. And the beauty about our credit union movement is its financial well-being and creating, you know, productive and prosperous communities, and just seeing people grow and be able to have access to things. So yeah, we're not astronauts. We're, you know, the work that we do doesn't require that level of engineering savviness, but yeah. It should be as important and have the same level of intention and support that we see in NASA and SpaceX.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Well, I'm going to take a hard left turn for my recommendation, because I started watching a new show that we really like. We have started to get more into this sort of comedy mystery sort of Only Murders in the Building kind of things. My husband likes detective shows, and we started watching The Residence on Netflix. And it is, have you started watching it yet, Tanya?
No, it's in my queue though.
Okay, good. You're going to love it. Uzo Adubo, okay. Who was on Orange is the New Black, played Crazy Eyes. And chef's kiss. Her character in this. We haven't gotten very far.
Okay.
So I can't even spoil it. But incredibly well done, very fast paced. Super fun to watch. And so that's my new obsession is The Residence on Netflix.
Excellent. Nice. You had me at Only Murders in the Building.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah.
Big fan.
Yeah.
Love that.
I didn't watch Oranges.
Sorry.
That's okay. I didn't watch Orange is the New Black, but my wife did. And every now and then I'd be passing through or whatever, and she'd have it on, and Crazy Eyes sucked me in every time. And she's like one of those characters that, like, it's almost tough to imagine them playing another character. So just to maybe see that has me interested enough in checking that one out for sure.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Cool. That was like the quickest episode ever, Danya. You are such a, I have to just say, Danya and I met when we did the I3 program, and the first event that we did that, the I3 program through the Filene Research Institute. And the first event that we got to see each other at was Big Bright Minds. And Danya, you're just such like a big, bright mind, and I'm so happy to know you. And I always, every time that I think about you or get the chance to talk to you, I just have this feeling that there's going to be a day. Well, shoot, today could be the day, but there's going to be a day that's more publicly visible where I get to say, like, I knew Danya when we were at Big Bright Minds together or whatever, you know, because you're just crushing it. You're doing such important work, and you bring so much talent to what you're doing. So thanks for who you are and for being back with us again. I'm so happy to know you.
Oh, gosh, Ben. Thank you. I was not prepared for that. Yeah, it is. It's a blessing to know you and be in this community, be in this credit union movement together. Yeah, there's just so much opportunity for us to do such good work, and it takes all of us. And so I'm so appreciative to you, Ben, and Sue. You know, being a three-peat, I'll come back anytime.
All right. Yep.
Yes.
We a couple more times, and we'll think of what our five timers club gift is. Maybe it's a smoking jacket. Maybe it's I don't know. We got some time to think about it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And another Filene I3 reunion. It should be in the books.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Yes.
Shout out to our Filene I3ers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then I'll tag on. I am incredibly lucky to have met you through Ben, Danya. And I am always so glad to have you on the podcast to see you. You're such a bright light. And on top of being such a analytical and deep thinker, so intelligent, unfortunately, we only do this for audio, so people cannot see what an absolute ray of sunshine you are. But someday they'll get to meet you in person, and then they will know.
There you go.
The secrets that we know. So thank you so much for being with us today and being our three-peater.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. This has been awesome.
And thank you to everybody for listening. We really appreciate every time you join us. You can always catch up on your favorite podcast app or by finding our podcast on our blog at exclamationcuso.com/blog.
Thanks, friends, for tuning in. Be awesome and see you next time. The Awesomeology Podcast is a production of Exclamation Services. Executive producers are myself, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.
Thanks to Kyla Ganther for our show artwork, Scott Sager for booking our guests, and Alex Westerhausen for social media support.